welcome to a special edition of Irreverent Testimony. It is October 22nd. Well, now technically the 23rd because it's after midnight. This is a late night show, and we just got done not too long ago with the marathon Benghazi grilling of Hillary Clinton by the House Select Committee that went all friggin' day. We have myself and Rachel and Dana are here. Hi, guys.
Hi. Hey.
So I'm basically gonna turn it over to you guys for our flash reactions here. This is a thing we like to do now when something politically interesting happens, like a debate or the shit show that we watched throughout the entire day today. So take it away, guys. What did we see today?
Good Lord, Trav, last time we saw this much Republican bullfuckery, you had a migraine and sleeping sickness, and how are you feeling?
Oh, I'm okay. You know, I was busy doing a lot of different stuff throughout the day, so I was kind of just checking in and out. I wasn't glued to the TV for, you know, 9 hours or 11 hours or however long it was.
Yeah, I was glued to the TV for 10 hours. I don't want to stick needles in my eyes and ears, but
yeah,
I got through it. Team Hillary, it was crazy. So real quick, I just want to kind of give anybody who doesn't know a little bit of background about what the fuck this hearing was even about, because mm-hmm. we hear Benghazi and we think, oh yeah, that Hillary thing, but it's a thing that actually happened. So basically, in September 11th of 2012, there was a terrorist attack on a, not an embassy, but a
consulate.
A compound. Yeah, what she called a diplomatic mission, which turned out to be kind of a compound in Benghazi, which is in Libya.
Yes.
And kind of came off of the tail end of, and well, I guess in the middle of a bunch of protests and violent riots and stuff because of this ridiculous, obnoxious movie called The Innocence of Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
Made some American filmmaker just to piss off Muslim people and sort of stoke Islamophobia. And it did piss them off. And so there was a bunch of riots and a bunch of protests. And in the middle of that, there was a terrorist attack on this compound in Benghazi. They set fire to the buildings and came in, and some people were killed, 4 people specifically, including the ambassador to Libya from the U.S. His name was Chris Stevens. He was the first U.S. ambassador to be killed in the line of duty since 1979. And out of this came a bunch of political craziness.
We've had 9 hearings now. Is that it? Is that right?
Yeah, well, there were 7 investigations, I think 9 hearings.
Right.
And an ARB report, which they referred to a lot today, mm-hmm. which stands for the Accountability Review Board. Which is an independent investigative board that looked into every possible nook and cranny of this tragedy.
Right.
And came out with this really important report. And the people who were on the board were some pretty
just American government heavy hitters.
Yeah, some heavy hitters. So Mike Mullen, who was an admiral, and this guy Pickering, who long served in the U.S. State Department, did all kinds of ambassadorships. He was a pretty great guy. Anyway, so the ARB report was published. It found that Hillary Clinton did nothing wrong. There was no wrongdoing found.
Well, yes, there were mistakes made, and there was room for improvement in terms of communication and hierarchy and some of the typical stuff that you see in the wake of an investigation and after a foreign tragedy. But there wasn't like anything in terms of dereliction of duty or,
right.
you know, ignoring problems or anything like that.
Or in some of the crazy conspiracy stuff, like she wanted it to happen.
Yeah, we'll get into that. Yeah.
But essentially the ARB report came out and said, you know, there's room for improvement. Here's the things we think you should do. But no, like, sort of criminal or civil wrongdoing was done.
No, of course not. No.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to pivot to Dana really quick for the question, why do we care? We've heard this word Benghazi thrown around for the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a million hearings. As liberals, we all have an eye roll when we hear the word. But this hearing specifically brings up some stuff that make us mad. So yeah. I want to just...
Just to interject, I don't think it's even just liberals anymore who eye roll at Benghazi now. I'm pretty sure it's everybody, conservative, liberal, indifferent alike.
Especially after today.
Especially after today.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just worth noting that, you know, for the most part, well, easy when you hear somebody to bring up Benghazi in a conversation, particularly during, you know, election season, you know, there might be a little bit of crazy there, and they're probably some sort of conspiracy nut.
Right. If it's either of our dads, then it's leading somewhere with Hillary ordered stand down or.
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
Personally flew to Benghazi that night and strangled Chris Stevens or whatever.
Yes. And then covered it up.
Hillary
took a hit out on him and
buried him next to Vince Foster, right?
Right, exactly. So, yeah, I think it's just worth pointing out that. You know, it was mentioned many, many times, particularly by, well, both sides of the aisle, but in a defensive side from the Republicans, kept bringing up, this is not intended to be a political thing. There's actually a point to this. There's a lot of unanswered questions. Right. There's a lot to be answered for. And on the Democrat side, they brought up what is the actual reality, which is there is absolutely no new piece of information that was garnered from 11 hours of meeting today. I think it was an 11-hour hearing, 7 hours of which was direct Q&A with Hillary.
Yeah, yeah.
And none of it was anything that we didn't know before today.
Sure.
A single shred of information was brought forward that if anyone had read any of the previous reports or any of the reporting on this, it was all completely known.
Just for the sake of full disclosure, if we have any new listeners, yes, we are on the liberal side of the spectrum, to say the least, and our opinions are obviously formed in partisan in nature. However, I would say tried our best to look at this as objectively as possible. If not as cheerleading for one side, then at least to try to say what the optics of this might be or how this looks. So we're going to give you, from a liberal perspective, we're going to give you, I would say, as much of a reasonable response as possible to what we saw today.
Yeah,
as reasonable as possible, considering some of the things that went down. It's hard to, I don't care what side of the spectrum you're on, to look at what went down today and not look at the Republican side of that dais and not kind of walk away with a little bitter taste in your mouth, thinking that that was definitely intended to be a snipe job.
Bullying.
It was very bullying, and it was intentionally, factually incorrect. I believe somewhere there was a quote that I saw kind of as a rundown to the events leading up to this that said if they're not completely lying, they're almost criminally unaware of how government works.
Well, that's they're not criminally unaware, and they're not stupid. In fact, most of them are former prosecutors or attorneys, and they know full well what they're doing. And
right. I think that was just a really tongue-in-cheek way to say that they are absolutely doing this on purpose, knowing that what they're really trying to do is create a political theater sideshow to really snipe Hillary Clinton's campaign.
Sure.
Despite their insistence all day. It just has nothing to do with politics. Right. All it really is just
getting
an attempt.
Getting to the truth.
Yeah.
And it's really just an attempt to try to hurt Hillary's early poll numbers.
Yes.
And they've come this far that they have to keep pushing no matter what, even though...
Exactly. I want you to talk for a second, if you can, about kind of the start of this whole thing and how Boehner didn't really want it to happen, and now it is.
Yeah, sure. And I liked that was actually covered a little bit, which is, although it's odd for this sort of House Select Committee hearing, since the whole thing is a partisan clown show anyway, I guess you might as well... get into the reality of it. Boehner was hesitant because Boehner kind of saw where this would probably go and where it's going and where it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually he was more or less strong-armed to being on board, like everything else that he's been strong-armed into doing, although he got some good news tonight. It looks like he might actually get to retire, but we'll get to that maybe at the end. And so... He kind of saw the bigger picture and saw through the tea leaves what this would sort of turn into, and it has. Obviously, a partisan witch hunt to the point where the only thing you saw today was the same old crap that was been rehashed over and over and over and over again. Results that we've already seen and arguments we've already seen that I guess the Republican folks on the committee didn't like, and so they wanted a different answer, or
right.
they want
to testify for her in some cases.
Right. Or they wanted to get the same answers and then just turn around and say, we think she's lying, which I, you know, they're entitled to do that, I guess. But yeah, if you were tuning into this hoping maybe just to see something different or interesting or try to get some answers, if you hadn't been paying attention to this point as to what happened in Benghazi in terms of possible failures or rooms for improvement, there was very little of that outside of maybe some of what Tammy Duckworth was doing.
Yeah, which we will get to in a second. So Trey Gowdy, right? He's the chair of this sham committee. And we talked on our last podcast about how he's been having kind of a tough week with this.
He has. But I got to say, in a weird way, I was impressed with him. He's a very smart guy, and you could tell that he was probably a really, really good prosecutor.
Yes.
But what he's doing is so flamingly obvious that, you know, where is his future sort of outside the most extreme partisan hackery in this?
Right. And he even said, like, I don't care what the political blowback is.
Clearly you don't if you've taken it this far.
Right.
Well, I think it's important that you point out that he probably was a brilliant prosecutor because he pulled out every prosecutor trick in the book.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Over the course of this, that, like, you know, his insistence that this is not a prosecution and just fall back on every dirty prosecutor trick he could think of.
They all did. When they got frustrated and weren't getting the answers, they just tried to look for any sort of discrepancy, even if it was completely irrelevant to anything, which is, you know, that is a classic prosecutor trick. You ask all these different questions, you get the defendant to stumble and contradict themselves, and then, you know, and then you could
that atmosphere of doubt.
Yeah,
and then
you have a sway with the jury. Only the jury out there is not a trial jury and watching with a very different lens.
Well, I think that's a little bit of why we might have a little, you know, the double jeopardy law that we have. I mean, if you have somebody who's essentially on trial 9 times for something, there's odds are when you ask them the same question 30 times,
you might get a variation. Yeah,
the answers might not be 100% word for word exactly the same, and that's everything you get to attack them for.
Man, and they did hit her on semantics today. It was crazy. Some of the questions they asked about. What does unsolicited mean?
Right.
What does,
let's give context for that, I think.
Yeah. So I guess that's the first point I want to talk about was this Sidney Blumenthal thing, right? So
yeah, the new boogeyman.
Good chunk of their time talking about emails that Hillary Clinton received and or sent from this man, Sidney Blumenthal, who was a close friend and political ally who they have already had come before the committee and testify,
mm-hmm.
whose transcripts of that they won't release, and we can talk about
which I'd like to talk
that
about, yeah.
later. And sort of they talked about him in this way that as though he was an advisor to her or in some official capacity to her. And in effect, he was not. He was a friend sending her some information about Libya
right.
that he
yeah.
had. And they really, really tried to nail her to the cross on this because they are prosecutors, because they thought, if we can get her to admit something wrong about him or something, anything, then we'll get everyone to realize that she's a liar or that she's –
well,
I don't
know. I have a different take on that, and this is where the whole Republican Party has become this weird like Breitbart comments section echo chamber of weirdness.
Yes.
And because yes. Let me back up a little bit to who Sidney Blumenthal is. He's a longtime Clinton advisor, and moreover, he's a shit disturber, and he pens articles for like liberal blogs and websites. So
yeah, what's his position with Media Matters?
Yeah, he's worked for them. He's written for Salon. You know, he's written for all the things that makes our father's blood pressures go up. So he's sort of a built-in villain. The problem is, if you're not some very partisan people like us or the folks on the other side, and you're just watching this, you're saying, who the fuck is Sidney Blumenthal and why should I care? And you, right. you even had – it was either Gowdy or somebody else bringing that up. Like, did you know he worked for Media Matters, and did you know he used to write for Salon? And Hillary's like, yeah.
Like, what is it about Ben Affleck again? Well, who the fuck is this guy?
Right.
Who is he?
Yeah. Then I thought an interesting thing just kind of to come out of some of the background information is that Jason Chaffetz and Trey Gowdy are legislative best buds.
Uh-huh.
And some of the hit pieces that Sidney Blumenthal has been involved in
were directly at Chaffetz. Absolutely. Uh-huh. Absolutely. So this was sort of very, very personal and partisan in a way that even went beyond sort of a partisan witch hunt and like got more into an internet flame war.
Yes.
Totally. And it's so inside the beltway that like the average person doesn't even know what's going on at this point.
Right, right. And it really made me wonder, what are they doing? Why are they doing this? You know, almost.
Are they tone deaf? Do they just not realize people don't know or care who this person is? Are they so inside that they think, if I mention him and I mention some emails, people are going to be mad, not realizing no one knows?
I think that there was a part of a longer strategy that they were trying to play that didn't really come out during that chunk, but came back up at the end when things got really heated and they were trying to do the let's wear her down and then ask her some really weird gotcha questions.
Yeah.
But I think the long game that just didn't get to do the checkmate on was if they put her in a position where she could talk about how important Sidney Blumenthal was to anything. I think they were just going to try to make her look bad by saying, listen, if you could take all these emails from somebody who's not even involved, couldn't take all these emails?
Right, right. They got there eventually, but why Sidney Blumenthal? Why, you know, you could have said you got all these emails from your tailor who was, you know, hemming your pantsuit or anybody. You know,
now, why did Groupon email you fucking 14 times that day?
Right, like, I was thinking that,
what does
too.
Groupon have to do with...
I was thinking, like, my aunt sends me crazy chain mail all day long of, like, if you don't respond to this within 14 minutes, your family's going to die.
Right, right.
I don't think that, like, I didn't ask her to send me that. I mean, I really did feel like this is, like, a chain mail situation, and she's being asked to say, why did this person send you emails? And then when they kind of realized that was happening... The whole sort of semantical,
right.
What does unsolicited mean?
And then she went back to sort of explaining how the chain of command works. If you're an ambassador and you have a security request or you have an issue you bring up, there's a chain of command. And with over, 700 senators worldwide, they obviously don't have the Secretary of State's private email. It's just not how it works. It wouldn't. It's not realistic to do that. And you can make an argument, I guess, and try – but that, okay, your personal friend has this access, but this ambassador who is in trouble doesn't have your personal email, and so that makes you a bad Secretary of State. And I guess that they think somebody will take that seriously as an investigative line of questioning.
It was really nonsensical. The metaphor I was kind of running with in my head was imagine like you threw out on Facebook, hey, I got into a car accident today. And you've got some good close family friend who's like, hey, I also know a lot of things about car accidents. Let me send you information as I can. And you go like, well, I'm not going to tell them specifically not to. And if something important comes across, I'm like, oh, that's good advice. I should tell some other people.
Okay, well, that's way more thought that you just put into it than I think the entire committee did. But more to the point, I definitely got the sense after the first couple hours that this is going to be, we're going to throw everything against the wall, all the shit against the wall we have, and see if anything sticks.
Right.
And I don't think anything did.
I don't either.
Again, in the interest of full disclosure, we are biased. And our track record has been pretty good at sort of sniffing out where things are going to go in terms of public sentiment. But boy, will I be surprised if in the next couple days the public sentiment is that, boy, Hillary did bad or looks bad or this hurts her campaign. I think it's going to work the opposite, like we predicted.
I think that having watched it, I will tell you, you know, I'm a Bernie supporter, but I watched that woman on that stage and I thought about the Republican debates and I thought about the debates coming up and I just thought to myself, She should be the president. She knows fucking everything. The way she was able to rattle off minute details of countries that I don't know where they are on a map necessarily. I could give you the region, but I don't necessarily. I mean, she knows everything. She is a wealth of knowledge. Mm-hmm. She was a rock today. She didn't waver. She didn't get angry. She didn't lash out. She didn't make mistakes. She was amazing. And so if what they wanted to prove was that she could definitely be president, I think they did that.
It absolutely cemented her, foreign policy acumen.
Oh,
and
yes.
I don't think there's anyone after watching that today that could say, like, she's really weak on foreign policy. Look at what happened when she was the secretary. Not everything was great. It's not because of her lack of knowledge or expertise, I guess.
No, and then I guess the weird angle they tried to play when that wasn't working was that, well, you changed or you sort of fudged the initial explanation of what happened for political reasons because...
Right. Hold on. Before we get to that really quick, mm-hmm. I want to just say one thing. With the Blumenthal thing, there was a very, very heated exchange between Elijah Cummings and Trey Gowdy.
Yeah.
Before they took a break, about whether or not the issue was whether or not they would release the transcripts from when Blumenthal testified before that committee, which was not public.
Right. Well, of course, Gowdy's not going to release the full transcript.
Right. Everyone was saying, if you want to talk about Blumenthal, we already interviewed him. He already testified. Let's look at what he said. The reason they don't want to do that is because the stuff they asked him was not about Benghazi. It was specifically about Hillary Clinton politically and the different organizations that she's a part of and how he was involved with those organizations.
Sure, yeah.
And since Gowdy has said, this is not political, releasing those transcripts was really problematic. And so when they had that heated match, they took a break. And immediately after the break, they came back and decided to take a floor vote among the committee members as to whether or not they would release those transcripts.
And it lost because there were more Republicans on the committee.
Right, 7 Republicans, 5 Democrats. Yeah, it was really funny. The first guy after Gowdy, who was sitting next to him, I think it was Pompeo, he said yay, and Gowdy turns to him and goes, nay. And he's like, oh, no, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I heard that. I heard that. Yeah. I caught that. Yeah, clown shoes.
Anyway, so they didn't release the transcripts, of course, but I just wanted to touch on that really quick, that they did interview this man that seemed so very important today to the investigation, and yet his testimony can't be released by them because it turns out what they wanted to question him about had nothing to do with Benghazi and everything to do with her campaign and his involvement with it.
Right, exactly.
I actually kind of subscribe to a theory that it's twofold. That it's, it obviously is political when you look at the questions that were asked, but also there could be some blowback if you look at the questions that they didn't ask from the left, or from the right, sorry, because in the last investigations, there's always been blowback when every single crazy nut job, wackadoo conspiracy theory is they don't pull on each one of those threads. People come out of the woodwork and go like, yeah, but this is what really happened, and, explain.
Why didn't you ask?
Why didn't you ask this person, like, why Hillary Clinton wanted to murder her friend and why it's a hit job? And, they get asked those questions as well, or get, I guess, in trouble for not having asked those questions. So they kind of get taken it from both sides if they release the full transcript. So it's kind of to their advantage to make sure that at least some of it stays private so that there's plausible deniability on both ends.
Well, sure, sure. And also... even if there was substantive Benghazi questions of Sidney Blumenthal, which there wouldn't be because he had basically nothing to do with it, it's much more effective if Sidney Blumenthal is this Illuminati-like character behind the scenes, and you can make him into this weird kind of boogeyman. If you release 5 hours of meaningless testimony, then you lose all that. So, of course, Gowdy's not going to, and he'll think of some excuse not to.
On the right, like, hold on to those characters. I mean, all the shadow characters that are supposedly running the...
George Soros and...
Soros, like... Yeah, so they actually have their shadow Illuminati people who are, a couple of families running entire campaigns. They're like, no, you guys have them too. Let's...
Yeah.
Some background
they have the
story
Koch
of
brothers,
some... Yeah.
And they're like, you guys have George Soros, though. And they're like, what? Anyway, okay, I want to get back to what you were saying, Travis, about their sort of hysteria about the video and whether the video caused or didn't cause the thing led to the thing. And do you want to give some background on that?
Well, sure, because I remember it vividly. In the days after the Benghazi attack, sort of the initial thrust coming from the White House and the State Department was that the video may have played a part or been the central role. After a couple days when that became clear that, you know, it was more coincidental than being a direct cause, they changed the story, and then Republicans kind of jumped on that and haven't really let it go, I guess even to this day, that that was some sort of intentional misdirection to do something. Or Mitt Romney, remember Romney was running for president, so he sort of jumped on that and he said, well, you don't even want to call it a terrorist attack and you want to blame it on some movie. And again, this is another echo chamber thing where that resonates within the same circle of people who hate Hillary and hate Obama and don't trust either of them and think it's all a grand conspiracy. But it's not really permeating outside of that. And to go further than that, the film did actually cause a lot of tumult throughout the world, unfortunately. And so, yeah, they're still hammering on that.
Now, like right at that time, this attack happened directly in the middle of violent protests and riots throughout the region because of that video.
Yeah.
And Hillary said specifically, like, I think to this day that the video had a part to play, and the person that we have in custody who was a part of the terrorist attack on the Benghazi compound has admitted that part of his role was directly because of that video.
Sure, so drumming up support from it,
They were initially mad about was that she said it was a protest gone wrong.
And Susan Rice, their initial,
it was a planned attack because of the video. So it's not that she was not being dishonest, but Jim Jordan, who, by the way, is a Republican on the side, who is the chair, I think, founder of the Freedom Caucus, is a total asshole, and he hit her on this so hard, he just kept saying, like, that's not what you said, and using these crazy semantic points about, like, you know, parsing her statement, you said the cause was this, and it was this crazy change that happened.
Right. And they kept going back and forth with, I think her wording was, some have pointed to the video as something, and then he turned around and said, no, see, you're saying that, and you invented it out of whole cloth, which is just ridiculous, and everybody watching knew it was ridiculous. So I don't know why he kept hammering that away, I guess because that's his job. I mean,
it's one of those instances where those prosecutorial tricks just kind of came back to kick them in their own ass, because they're trying to say, you know, you said it was black and then you said it was white. Like, I mean, it turns out it's actually in some gray area where, you know, the actual facts really bear out what they're saying and say, like, here's why when we initially reported on it, you know, we thought it was comfortable to say this, but it turns out it's more nuanced than that. And they're like, no, more nuanced means you were wrong.
And you lied.
Why won't you admit that you lied when you're actually just adding more detail to the narrative?
And you purposely misled, and she didn't take the bait. She stayed cool and, you know, answered concisely and did not jump down the rabbit hole and start screaming and flailing or whatever they expected her to do. I don't know what they expected her to do, but she didn't do it.
So interesting was they were like, you sent an email to your husband. Okay. Former President Bill Clinton. the day after the attacks that said, hey, this may have been a terrorist attack instead of because of the video.
Right.
You were telling that to Bill. Why weren't you telling that to the American people? And you're like, okay, I sent an email to my husband saying this might be a thing, so I should come out to tell the American people it's done.
Yeah, you know, sure. Yeah, I was thinking that. I was thinking that too, but she was smart not to even go there and sort of even Hillary-splain, like, you know, the things you say your close family members in confidence aren't the same as, like, public.
The press conference? You come on.
But it was good. Didn't go down that hole.
She just kind of had that look on her face, like, you're seriously fucking asking me this question, and I think that was enough.
I think that was wise too, because if you look at what's actually all in there in total, like, she could say, you know, I've got my family and who I talk to, but there's the extra layer of protection of the fact that he is an ex-president with secret clearance.
Mm-hmm. That's why they couldn't hit her.
And
on
so
it.
They couldn't really hit her on it. But if she decided to take the bait, they could always and go down that line of trying to defend herself. A, she looks like she's on the defensive, and sure. B, She also sent a similar email to Chelsea, and they could hit her on, like, okay, so you're going to say that, you know, your daughter also has secret clearance, because we know for a fact that that's not true.
Right.
So
she was smart just to steer clear of it.
Yeah.
Just let him have his tantrum about that and make it look as stupid as it did and then move on. And that's what she did.
And he did, by the way. Even the correspondents that I was watching during the break were like, that Jim Jordan guy looked angry.
Yeah, he sure
not
did.
Like angry about Benghazi, like I hate you, Hillary angry, like I'm out to get you.
Right, right. Well, that's his role. He's the Freedom Caucus Tea Party darling, and yeah. His constituents voted him in and sent him money to be an attack dog for them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And he did that for them, but I think he did himself and them a disservice. At the end of the day, you look at it and you go, okay, so what did you prove there? What did you do for Benghazi and the victims, and what exactly that wasn't right. partisan about that? Is there anything you can point to that he did that wasn't partisan, that wasn't bullying, that wasn't attacking, that proves that this was not a political committee?
Yeah, so that's what I was about to say is, if, you know, that type of outburst, which happened several times throughout, but that exchange in particular, made me not just think about how partisan it was, but how crass they were being to try to hold this in the name of, you know, American lives.
Nonpartisan, yeah.
And you know, to absolutely politicize the entire thing.
Well, MSNBC did a pretty good job today because they have people that worked they had correspondents and people that were in the Watergate hearings, which Hillary Clinton was herself a part of that, by the way, so she's got good experience with this. And just, you know, highlighting how different this sort of thing is even compared to Watergate.
Sure. How partisan it is, how not fact-finding it is. That, yeah.
Sure, but that's completely obvious, and I think it starts to lend to a bigger question here. Okay, well, what was the point then if we're not even going to entertain the idea that it was to get to the truth and honor the four dead Americans, then was it just all for fundraising? You know, these people are just – Gowdy and this whole crew are just going to turn around for their election campaigns and say, hey, look, I really stuck it to Hillary. You know what? I think the majority of that is the case.
Yeah.
I think so, too. I think that, unfortunately for them, that might work. But I think in doing so, they also spotlighted some of our guys, which were the five Democrats on the other side of the aisle. And some of them really stood out today. Elijah Cummings, who's obviously already a rock star, but maybe some people didn't know who he was,
mm-hmm.
made some really impassioned pleas that, you know,
yeah.
I was brought to, like, I got a little choked up. Also,
he was able to get on the soapbox and really call out the hearing a couple times out for what it really was, and he did not mince words at all.
Yeah,
and then it develops this terrible false equivalency. They say, see, look, they're just partisan sniping. It's like, well, one of them is trying to explain why this is a joke of a partisan witch hunt.
Right.
Right.
But I thought the only one that, you know, really was the only person really on the dais at all that made it seem not that way, even at least for a couple of minutes, was Tammy Duckworth.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Let's talk about her for a minute.
She actually seemed like she cared. And it's not surprising because she's a decorated veteran.
Yeah, she's a wounded veteran.
She really wanted to talk about. Go ahead.
No, yeah, I was just saying she's a wounded veteran. She's a wounded war veteran.
Yes.
Yeah. And she really wanted to talk about what we could possibly learn from this experience to make people safer in the future. And she actually helped a lot with some of the where I felt like the entire conversation was devolving into trying to talk about getting out of regions like that. It seemed like a lot of the Republicans were saying, why do we even have embassies in places like this in situations like that? And she really kind of salvaged that and really made the case for, of course, we can't ditch diplomacy in places that are unsafe. That's where diplomacy is needed the most.
Right.
And she really dug in on the idea that, you know, what we should be talking about is how these lives could have not been lost.
I also think she made them look really bad because what she did was have a Benghazi hearing. She
right.
asked Hillary Clinton pointed questions about what happened, what went wrong, what could have been better, and what's been done to fix it. Every time she got the chance to talk, at no point did she address what the Republicans said about Hillary. She didn't defend Hillary. She asked her a couple of tough questions even, and it was specifically about Benghazi, what the fucking point of the hearing was supposed to be. And I think coming on her coattails when they called a stark reminder that it should have been is what Tammy Duckworth was doing. And what the Republicans were doing was something else entirely.
Yeah, especially at this point in the whole, you know, multiple investigations and in this committee, you know, if we're not going to be gathering any new information and the Accountability Review Board has already done what they're doing, the point of finger pointing, there's no reason to do finger pointing at this point. Everyone's been cleared of wrongdoing. So we're going to hold a hearing at this point. It should be as kind of a lessons learned kind of thing, and let's really sit down
exactly.
and talk about,
exactly.
you know, what can we take from this entire thing to make sure that something like this is less likely to happen in the future.
Sure, but we all knew what was really going on today, and now right. so do the rest of the American people.
Yeah, right. And she just really put a fine point on that, I think. She was a hero today. Also, Adam Schiff, I think I'm pronouncing that right.
From California?
Yeah. He was great. He was definitely on Hillary's side, and he definitely came to her defense, but he brought up some really good points at a lot of every time we got to talk about what wasn't being said and kind of some of the misinformation that was coming out from the other side, and kind of tried to call to truth some of the stuff they'd been saying.
Mm-hmm.
Reining in some of the conspiracy theory tangents that was kind of going on, and really, you know, reining that stuff in and talking about how, I guess, the entire proceedings should be pointed in a particular direction. It's not on track to do that and try to pull everyone back. It didn't have the desired effect. But.
No.
Well, let me...
So just... Go ahead.
Let me jump in and play a little devil's advocate here. I thought Hillary did really well today. Obviously, she helped herself. But she's still a politician. She's a very good politician. And it was sort of interesting that where they seemed to be going, the Republicans early on, in like the first couple hours, was you gave all these sort of misleading political answers and we want to get down to real answers. But then they went so off the partisan deep end that they really actually made it way easier for her to be really, really political and turn it into almost like a campaign speech. Like there were certain things she said. To be honest, they were a little Weasley and political. She downplayed certain findings of the ARB, mm-hmm. But they allowed her to do that. they gave her so much space to do that that it became easy. It became, you know, a slam dunk. And you know, there were certain ways she answered questions about the when it got into the email stuff, which was really sort of amorphous and. They didn't really seem to have a plan on that, just that you had this private email server and she's like, you got most of the emails. And they're like, well, there's emails we don't have. And she's like, you'll get them. And, you know, going back and forth with that, it's like they didn't have a really cohesive way to say why having the private email server might have been a bad idea. So they just kind of were – it was along with everything else that was getting thrown against the wall. And it gave her a lot of space to just kind of say like, yeah, probably wasn't a good idea, but I did. So what? So they kind of worked against themselves.
Yeah. I think the, you know, getting into the private server stuff, it really felt like there was a little bit of a flail, series of moments there where people didn't really, none of the people that really trudged on that ground, they had very pointed, serious, angry questions about it. Like, I'm not talking about your private email account. I'm talking about your private email server.
It's like, oh,
really, really
okay.
upset. And she'd be like, oh, okay. Well, what about it? And they'd be like,
Can I just say really quick? I don't think any of them know what that means.
Right.
I seriously was watching this being like, I don't think you guys know what those words mean. I don't actually think you know what the difference is between a server and an email address and where it's held and how it's secured.
Yeah.
It's like they were just using talking points. And then when she would kind of, just wait for them to finish, they would flail like, but that's bad, right? Like,
well, what? here's
it's the server thing. Tell me.
Yeah.
And she's like, what about it? And they're like, I don't know. It's bad. Like, you have no idea what the fuck a server
well,
is.
Well, pivoting to pure politics for a second. This is where they really hurt themselves, the Republicans today, because you did have, especially in the last couple months with the New York Times hyperventilating, you know, email this, email that, email server this and that, and it was starting to affect her poll numbers and her overall trustworthiness. And people that were maybe having this on the radar, they just hearing email server, email server, email server, I think that's something bad. And then they tuned in today are going to be like, well, what is this all about?
They don't even know.
What's the problem?
Yeah, and no one explained. No one explained what was wrong. No one.
Yeah. Yeah, and no one dared floated a wild theory that you had a private email server, therefore you're hiding the email that says Operation Let Chris Stevens Die, you know, commence, which was where Issa was going back when he was involved with this.
Not only Issa, but I will say that fucking girl, what is her name, Roby? Let's look. Martha Roby.
My Alabama girl.
Oh, my God. Can we talk about her for just a hot minute?
Yeah.
Oh,
God.
I want to just say, she started out with this, I'm kind of scared to be talking.
Yes.
It seemed that way, right? What I'm doing. And then it pivoted into this.
Then she got emboldened when...
Mad because I didn't get to finish. Then she asked Elijah Cummings to concede his time to her after about 10 seconds, which was hilarious. And then the next time she got an opportunity to speak, she would like to do a roll call with Hillary Clinton of who was still present in the office when she left, who did she call and at what times, basically implying that she's a bad friend and she doesn't care.
It was
Dana's
Prosecutor 101. Yeah.
No, I actually think that the more insulting situation happened was before she asked Elijah to forgo his time so she could finish a question that she was about to start talking to. And it sounded very much like she, and I think this is why she was nervous to start the line of questioning, because I think she knew that was going to be her final question. Which was essentially like, hey, you said several times that you were really, really great friends with the ambassador, and
We believe you
that you're really great friends, but the question that we have for you is, and then it was like, well, I don't know, they're going to tell me that I'm out of time, so...
But, like, why didn't you just pick up the phone and call him and tell him it was dangerous? Basically, she's like, you're a bad friend, and you let him die.
Yeah, why did you let your best buddy get murdered?
Yeah, that was weak, but Hillary really embarrassed her, and that's when she got pissed off.
Yeah.
When she started the line of questioning, like, okay, so you went home for the night? And were you alone the rest of the night? And the way she said it, I mean, immediately I thought, are you asking if Hillary Clinton got a booty call that night?
Right.
And Hillary picked up on that immediately and just cracked up.
Well, I don't think it's funny. I don't think it's funny that you were alone all night because this was happening. And she's like,
no, it's funny.
Sorry. No, it's funny. The way you just said it was funny because
that was funny in a cultural context of the 90s that you may not have picked up on. Yeah. But that was hilarious.
Because you're an amateur and you just stepped in the ring with somebody who just humiliated you.
You're tangling with right now.
And then with the roll call bullshit, this person, were they there? Did you call this person? Like, if you want to spend your 3 minutes asking me who was present when I left, and then I loved when they went back to the Republic or the Democratic side and they were like, do you know where Leon Panetta was when you called him? And she's like, I don't. And he's like, this was Adam Smith.
Mm-hmm.
I do. He was at home doing exactly what you were doing. When the CIA annex got attacked, he didn't leave his home. He stayed where he was and he stayed on the phone. Like,
he stayed close to his personal email server.
Exactly. Like, this line of questioning is political. It's personal. It's offensive.
Well, it's stupid is what it is. It
makes them look bad.
Anybody with a brain can see this as a lawyer trick to try to get you to stumble and to try to get you to look like
you have weak character.
But anybody who's watched a little Law & Order knows this trick already, which is everybody. So it was really embarrassing. I mean, I was embarrassed for her.
I was too.
Oh, yeah.
Because if, like, this is the best you have, come on, really?
You were at home? Did you go back? Did you talk to them? Like,
I mean, she would have done better, you know, keep hammering on you were a bad friend to the Chris Stevens line. You know, at least you might have had some emotional capital with that. But with the first-year law student trick, like, please, really?
Yeah, I was actually – I thought it was a little embarrassing to her, and then I was also kind of personally just lamenting the days and days of what we'll hear from the Fox News side of things.
Yeah, I'm not really worried about that. I mean, so what?
I'm not concerned that anyone's going to necessarily find it compelling that doesn't already have their mind made up. I just hate where they're going with their arguments about how
– oh, it's amazing.
Like,
yeah, tell.
This is, you know, a great moment for transparency is how the morning started, and by the end of the day – Fox's argument was this entire thing has been completely orchestrated by the Clintons for her to get basically.
They cut it off. They cut it off at 6 o'clock.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, they stopped airing it. They're like, okay, well, yeah, we're getting out of this.
She's obviously not going to put her own foot in her mouth.
Yeah.
So since she's not going to put her own foot in her mouth, we're going to pivot and say that she orchestrated this entire thing so that she could get a free 11-hour stump speech so that in the future for the rest of the campaign, she can answer anytime somebody brings anything up. She can be like, listen, I talked about it for 11 hours on public television, and the entire thing is as transparent as can be. My campaign won't be talking about it anymore, which she'd be smart to use it that way if she could. But their whole argument is that, you know, Hillary Clinton somehow used her, you know, secret Sith powers and arranged everyone to get together to ask her exactly the questions that she knew that she'd be able to answer properly so she doesn't have to talk about it anymore.
Okay.
Literally what they said. All right. They said, at least now she knows she won't have to answer these questions in debates anymore. She orchestrated this entire thing.
She will. You think if she's debating Jeb or Carson, they're not going to bring up Benghazi?
She was subpoenaed. This is not her idea. She was subpoenaed.
But Fox News viewers aren't going to – they don't know. They don't care. You know?
I mean, it should be dumb not to use it to her advantage that particular way. But the way they're spinning that is when she brings it up to her advantage, we should all be skeptical of her responses
because the rest of the Fox viewers who are going to run out and support her now, right?
Well, of course not, but it gives them talking points and they can be like, this whole entire thing was a sham because she got to answer the questions properly.
And how bad does that tell you that this was for the committee today?
Exactly. No, exactly. Right.
That Fox has to spin it that it was some sort of conspiracy to help Hillary Clinton. Because they've been drooling over this. They've been rubbing themselves raw waiting for this. And I guess they hoped against hope it might turn out better than it did. But, you know.
Well, I can't believe that they didn't foresee that someone of the caliber of a politician of Hillary Clinton. It's not like she's just going to show up and be like, you got me.
Oh, shit. I didn't think about that.
Well, they always do this with the Clintons. They hate the Clintons so much they completely underestimate them for some reason. It's a little bit of cognitive dissonance that they are these incredibly powerful, smart, crafty politicians, yet you keep trying to box them in and then just completely destroying yourself doing it.
I actually have kind of a little bit of maybe a cynical point of view on this, just a tiny bit, which is because they're running so much or, you know, have a tendency to try to pick the underdog candidate or the particularly in this race, the non-establishment candidates and try to back them as either backups or try to get that folksy Sarah Palin kind of
Maverick-y
thing. Well, and the people who are non-establishment candidates, that I think there might be a chance that they'll spin it in the way that, like, of course she did a great job. This is what she does. She's a politician for a living. You want somebody like that running the White House who can take this kind of shitty situation and spin it in her favor?
No, they're not that smart, because already Trump came out and said that she looked bad and terrible, and this makes her unqualified. And I think Carson said something similar. So,
that's because she had her answers so well prepared and knew her answers very well.
Right.
I think it's a good point, though. Like, I think they could spin this potentially to say what a politician she is. Even when she was wrong and she lied, she was able to spin it. And what does that mean for what she'd do as president? I could definitely see someone, especially like a fucking Frank Luntz or whatever, spinning it that way. Yeah. It's going to take him a couple days.
Do you think their viewers are smart enough to sort of get on that wavelength, though, with what they're saying?
I think they are. I think that if you get Ben Carson or Donald Trump to come out and say, like you just said, like, this looks really bad for her because look how polished she was in such a tense situation. She just rolled answers off the tongue.
Trump, no. In fact, Trump had a temper tantrum today at being surpassed in one poll by Ben Carson and insulted everybody in Iowa, so there's that.
See, unfortunately, this overshadowed all the rest of the news.
We won't get into it all tonight.
But just a quick rundown. Paul Ryan is going to go for the Speaker of the House.
He's running,
I'm a little surprised. I think my theory of somebody is bullshitting somebody and it's going to blow up in a few months is going to happen. I'm just not sure which side.
I'm staying with my theory. He's just going to use his public presentation of basically like a ransom so that if they fuck him, he can go, you said it's your fault, and he's going to throw them under the bus and save the party. That's his plan. But
okay, sounds dicey.
Let's finish up the Benghazi bullshit. So Hillary got a little teary at one point,
and
I wanted to burn the building down. She did great. there was some gotcha at the end, which I wanted to just touch on briefly before we go. It's as though it was planned, shockingly.
Imagine that.
Imagine that. That they were going to ask her some really tough questions, specifically Mike Pompeo, a Republican from Kansas, started asking her yes and no questions at the very end of the debate. Right. And it was very intentionally trying to get her in perjury territory.
Well, and there was a lot of really interesting theater involved in that, because before he started asking the questions, he said, like, he reiterated it, like, four times, because he really wanted her to say yes, because it would make her look bad. He's like, if you need me to ask these questions in private, because it's classified information, you can go ahead and tell me. And she was not going to rise to that, because if she ever said, no, that one's classified, that immediately makes her look crazy, or, you know, like, hiding there's something to hide.
Yep.
And there's one thing that I thought was interesting, it occurred to me many times throughout this, is, you know, anything that is a State Department communication or anything that is classified information, you know, she no longer has that position anymore, but while she was still the Secretary of State, she's the person who decides if something is classified, she's allowed to say it's no longer classified.
Well, there is, but
specifically in 2009, there was an executive order that said any person that for your department is allowed to say something is classified, they're also allowed to unclassify that thing.
Sure.
And so basically, and I don't know, I'm a smartass, so I would have probably risen to the bait, but she didn't.
No. And part of that,
if I released it, that means it's unclassified. If I didn't release it, that means it's classified. It's as easy as that. I classify and unclassify things at my leisure if it's a State Department.
She did actually say that at one point, but as far as where Pompeo was going, that's where he was bringing in a little the really, you know, the crazy conspiracy theory stuff.
Yeah.
And I most people probably didn't know where he was going with that, but there's like a secret Illuminati conspiracy where he thinks that the State Department was trying to buy arms privately and go around Congress, and so they're going to try to get her like in an Oliver North thing at some point, I guess.
Yeah.
They're going to use contractors to try to distribute
Right.
Yeah, and also they were trying to tie it in with the Blumenthal email he already had, and he asked her like a couple of ones that he knew would be no's, and then threw the yes one in, and then he's like, well, I have that email, and she's like, I didn't seriously consider doing that, and he's like, define seriously, and you're like, back to fucking this again?
Right. So it's like, at some point, once she's President Clinton, somebody's going to bring impeachment hearings because there was an email that once mentioned something about buying arms, and then Hillary said no today, so they're going to try to link that, and good luck.
With the gotcha questions, and then, you know, she lost her voice at one point, had to have
a coughing fit,
Yeah, had a coughing fit. She was physically, she looked exhausted. And he said, I've saved this till the end of the hearings, just in case, blah, 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 with the maybe we need to do it in secret. And I think it was so transparent that what they were saying was, we planned this out. We saved the questions that we think we're going to get you on perjury or fraud or whatever later. We're saving till the end so that we can make sure we either have the sound bite or we have the information we need to charge you later. And it was so obvious to everyone that they just looked like bullies.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. At that point,
I mean, everyone who maybe was wavering was so on her side at that point. At least I was. I was like, you all are assholes. And And then the little theater that went on between Cummings and Gowdy when Pompeo said, it's fine, I'll get it in the next round.
He's like, oh,
and
no.
And then Cummings said, like, this what next round? And then they had a little talk, and he's like, okay, I actually am going to give you an additional whatever yes or no question. And in such bullshit, it was so transparently bullying, it was awful.
Well, and Gowdy himself did that right at the very end. You know, he had really one last question, and he was kind of being, I guess the timekeeper was letting him know, like, it's time to move on or move. And he's like, well, we can either answer this one last question that I've gotten this round or we can do it in the next round. And we're like,
the longer it takes for you to talk to me, the longer it's going to take for this
That happened way earlier in the night. I'm talking about the last question of the night before.
Yeah. And at that point, I think Cummings whispered him, are you seriously going to drag this on till fucking midnight?
Yeah,
like, really? And then even Trey Gowdy was like, okay, I guess that's a bad idea.
All right,
fine.
But see, again, this makes me wonder, do these people actually think in their little bubble that this spectacle was somehow damaging to Hillary Clinton, or is it just purely for fundraising for their reelection campaigns to not get primaried at home? Is this all so completely self-serving that it's actually working against any sort of unified movement that the party's having? And that's where my mind started going, right, that this is so bad. This is working so in opposition to what they're supposedly even skeptically trying to do. I'm not even talking about – forget about getting to the truth of Benghazi. Let's take the ulterior motive and say this is to bring down Hillary Clinton. Like, it was so bad, that didn't even seem like it was a possibility. Like,
right. I just think it's like, get my face on the TV and
– yelling at the lady president so that she can look bad and I'll look like I at least tried to make her be the truth.
I can go to my constituents and my fundraising people back home and see I attacked Hillary Clinton
the
way you wanted to. Yeah, and if that's it, I mean, that to me is just another stark
total abuse of power.
Well, not just that. It shows what a complete lack of leadership in the Republican House there is. That it's so out of control that everybody's just scoring individual brownie points for their own fundraising and individual campaigns, that there's not even a unifying force and a goal to be worked towards.
Is there even a party anymore? Well, are they a party?
They're some kind of party.
Not my kind of party.
No. Yeah. But I think we should pivot a little bit to the rest of today's news and how this all sort of fits together, maybe.
Sure.
Paul Ryan is going to officially run for speaker, and I guess he's going to get it, barring some last-minute catastrophe with the GOP House. That's always a possibility. But it looks like he decided to do it, and I still am not sure. I still can't quite – still does not compute.
I don't know. Being in the running for the speakership at this point is kind of like the House's Harrenhal right now. Oh, sorry, that's a really geeky reference. It's doomed. It's doomed. It's cursed. Any person who gets anywhere near it has been having just insanely bad luck, and I think a lot of that's not necessarily bad luck. It's sniping one another, and you know that there was the whole thing.
Yeah, but
McCarthy Paul... and being told like if you seriously consider to run, we're going to drag out all your skeletons in the closet.
Well, we still don't know exactly what that means, but
I think we know pretty close what that is, but. That's for another day.
But look, here's the thing. Paul Ryan made this list of demands. He said, A, you can't do to me what you kept doing to Boehner. You can't keep challenging my leadership position. Once I take a stand you might not necessarily like. And they're going to go along with that? Okay. The second thing was like, I'm not going to go out and fundraise like Boehner did. That is really important for House Republicans, for the Speaker to be out fundraising. So they're going to let him not do that.
Well, they don't really need him to do that anymore. I mean, that can be outsourced to super PACs.
Yes and no. Yes and no. But then thirdly, what is Paul Ryan's actual plan?
Well, he said you have to be willing to compromise and not shut the government down.
And all of a sudden they're going to do that just because Paul Ryan's the speaker?
I mean, that's how what the job's supposed to be.
What I keep saying. He's telling the public this so that when they pull their antics, he can blame them. I think he's trying to get rid of the Freedom Caucus. I'm serious.
And are they that obtuse that they're going to go to war with him, lose, be completely marginalized, and then just go down in flames?
I think they're such demagogues at this point. Like they're just so convinced in their bubble that they're correct that they think that, yeah. I think they would. I think they're that stupid and have such ideology based.
So you're saying they're gonna? Well, okay, they're gonna have no choice but to let Paul Ryan actually govern. He's gonna raise the debt limit. We're gonna get an infrastructure bill.
No,
we're not gonna repeal Obamacare.
No, I'm not saying that. They're gonna totally not do what he wants them to do. But when they do that, which they're definitely gonna do, he's gonna come out and throw them under the bus. He's gonna come out and say, look. The reason the government doesn't work is these 40 people who have already agreed to compromise and they're not willing to compromise. The rest of the Republican Party has gotten on board with this. It's these 40 people who are holding everything up. They are the problem. They need to go.
Well, if that's the case, then it's going to get really ugly because that means that some of the leading people in the Freedom Caucus, like Raul Labrador,
Jim Jordan, who was on today,
who have gone turncoat on them, and probably some of the – higher ups in the establishment of the GOP party has said, look, do you want a future in this party or not? You can ride down in flames with these people here, or you can get on the stick. We're going to have to do this, this, and this. I'm really skeptical. I don't see how this works out.
I mean, I don't see how anyone can take over the speakership without turning the tables on the hostage situation.
Me too.
I mean, it has to be turned around, and rather than, you know, letting them take the rest of the party hostage, you have to dictate terms to them in which it's clear that they're the hostage. Either they have no future whatsoever, or we're going to work together, and that's what the speaker's supposed to do.
Oh, sure, in theory. But how and why are they falling in line? The Tea Party and the Freedom Caucus and the crazies. How and why are they falling in line with this Paul Ryan speakership and agreeing to rules in which they're not going to be able to challenge them the way that they challenge Boehner? It's just not adding up to me.
Yeah, the only part to me that I don't really see precisely how it works is the actual, you know, electoral math on it to see how he actually gets elected as speaker. But if they can't find anybody else willing to do the job, then they're going to have to agree to the terms.
No, he's got the votes right now, it looks like. But that's the thing.
On the condition that, you know, those terms are not going to be changed. I mean,
well, what did he lie to them? Did he say, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and shut the government down? And, you know, I mean, maybe he's been brainwashed and maybe he is going to pull a Newt and completely shut the government down and have the credit rating destroyed and then really screw over the Republicans in 2016.
No, see, I wasn't going that way. I was going with kind of the angle that, you know, the Freedom Caucus maybe thinks that we can agree to this now, but we can backdoor him later because those are, you know, terms that, you know, we've got the numbers. We can always oust him or, you know, make things so difficult for him. You know, we change our votes later. We can promise to vote one way or another, but that stuff doesn't matter when it comes down to the actual.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Either Ryan or these other people, you know, had their, you know, their fingers crossed behind their back, and you think it's bad now, it's going to turn into real war once we get down to brass tacks.
Right.
And they try to stop the debt ceiling from being raised, and which may happen in just a couple days. And everything else going on.
Well, I think that's the point Rachel was trying to make is, you know, if he gets them to agree to these terms and they don't live up to it, he gets to pull out the stops on telling, you know, getting them basically outed in the midterms or, you know, the next round of elections and saying, you know,
he's trying to take the party back from them.
He's trying
to say, look, the Republican Party is a joke because of these 40 people. I have agreed to take the speakership if they agree to these terms. They have not agreed to these terms. They're trying to shut the government down. These are the people that are stopping the government, not the Republican Party. These people, specifically.
Yeah. The point being either you get in line and then develop a track record of being in line,
right,
or next election cycle, you're going to look
fucked.
Like complete fucking tools.
Because even
you have
your
no
own
shot.
Party is going to shut you down.
Well, yeah, see, that seems dicey to me. The core of the Republican base right now is more in line with these crazy Freedom Caucus types.
I don't think that Paul Ryan gives a shit.
Their party is falling the fuck apart. And I think that's true for Republican primary voters who are paying attention a year and a half out. I don't think that's necessarily true for Republican voters in general.
I don't know.
Especially when we start talking about, you know, trying to get the independent vote, trying to get people who have, you know.
Who's leading in the Republican primaries right now?
What I'm saying is not just Republican primary voters, but Republican voters in general.
Or the voters that Republicans are trying to win over that have historically either been undecided or have,
not
you know,
voted.
Demographically, saying Latino voters,
I don't know.
To keep saying that they'd like to win over. They're not winning any of them over right now, so.
No.
I don't see how this ends well for either Ryan or the Freedom Caucus people. I still think...
No, I agree.
I think it's a last-minute gambit. I don't know what else they can do. I don't see a better outcome with any other choice. This seems to me like, you know...
Yeah, but since when are those crazy people pragmatic?
They're not.
This is what I don't understand. There is a key piece missing to me. Where they got their supermajority in the Freedom Caucus and said, okay, we're going to go with this Paul Ryan thing unless Paul Ryan completely sold them a bill of goods and bullshitted them on what his plans are. There's no way he went to them and said, hey, guess what? I'm going to have to raise the debt ceiling. I'm going to have to do this. And we're going to have to fund an infrastructure bill. We're not going to be able to repeal Obamacare. Are you with me? And they said yes.
Well, one of the two of them sold one or the other a bill of goods. I'll agree with you on that.
I mean, in my opinion, if I had to guess, I would say that – because no one else was stepping up, he said, I will step up, but you have to, for one time in your lives, fucking play the long game. Because the entire Tea Party was not predicated on playing the long game. It's been a series of short games, and you're like, what was the...
And hostage taking.
And hostage taking. You're like, what exactly did you think was going to happen 5 years from now? Nobody thought about that. Nobody thought about, you know.
Well, what they thought was they were going to have President Romney and they were going to, you know, dominate.
Even that's
both have a supermajority in both houses. And
I don't even think they thought that far ahead when they initially started pulling all this bullshit.
Well, and this was back in the McCain days. Remember, Sarah Palin's bus was Tea Party Express.
Right. This was the answer to Obama, all the outrage that there is a President Obama now.
Not because he's black, though.
That was the grassroots. Oh, no. It has nothing to do with
it. It was just because he's a Democrat? Was that
I mean, we're basically looking at 6 years of really short-sighted, reactionary policymaking that I don't think anybody really thought about. What are the long-term ramifications if we actually enact any of these things? They've all been reactionary and trying to ride the wave of what they thought was either popular opinion or what they felt could be turned into popular opinion. They made it seem grassrootsy and folksy enough that the people started to believe, hey, yeah, that did come from us.
Yep.
Well, I still don't understand how this is going to work or what's going to happen. And there's some votes coming up, and there's a new repeal, Obamacare repeal plan that they're going to try to push through. And, you know, they're still going after Planned Parenthood. And I just don't know.
I mean, we'll see. This is all speculation. Obviously, we have no idea what happened behind closed doors, but we'll see what happens.
And as far as, you know, repealing Obamacare and fucking around with Planned Parenthood, keep them coming. Every time one of these things happens, you just walk away looking worse than you did before, especially when you start talking about round 47.
Yeah.
Like, you think round 9 on the Benghazi hearing sounds bad? Like, what is around, like, 54 on repealing Obamacare?
Who knows?
Well, just a quick pivot to another thing. tonight, there's a couple things lost in the shuffle. One, if anybody cares, I think Rand Paul's former top advisor has now been indicted, but when he was working for his dad, if anybody cares about that, probably not. And Donald Trump, a new poll came out that showed Ben Carson overtaking Donald Trump in Iowa, which isn't terribly surprising. But he had a hissy fit and threw out a tweet that the Iowans are brain damaged from Monsanto.
Oh, wow. Pissing off corporations and the first primary
Trump
voters.
Doesn't need their
That's crazy.
Yeah, right? Take a shot at Monsanto. And then he turned around, he took it down, and then blamed it on an intern. It just shows you how undisciplined this guy is and how fragile that all is. But Ben Carson could be the new frontrunner, guys.
Jesus Christ, Travis and Dana.
Wait till they get a load of this guy.
I cannot with Ben Carson.
Another one, please. Please.
Oh, God. But I have to listen to him talk then, and it fucking gives me heebie-jeebies.
Is this the beginning of the end then? Okay, let's take a long view here and pretend not everybody who votes Republican is completely psychotic.
Yes.
And maybe is this the first final sign that Trump actually is ready to implode and he just has absolutely no discipline and things are really going to start snowballing on him? And then Carson will be the front runner, and then people start listening to what he has to say, and then all of a sudden, oh shit, okay, I guess it better be Bush or Rubio after all. Is that where we're going?
Exactly correct. Yeah. Only because, and I'm going to say this truthfully, this is how I feel, Trump is going to implode his own campaign. He said a couple months ago, someone asked him, when is it that you would stop running? And he was like, if I ever stopped being the winner. That sounded like Arnold, but you know what I mean? He was like,
right. And Pierre, to his credit, said that about 3 months ago.
Then I would stop running. So yeah, maybe if he loses in Iowa, or maybe if he even smells a sign of loss in an early primary state, maybe he stops running.
Or just implodes.
Yeah,
or
just completely implodes. Just falls apart because he's this fragile, egomaniac, baby man tears person.
Well, or at this point, being the frontrunner for that long has inflated his ego even that much more.
Even more than it was
that
possible.
He now really actually thinks that, it, you know,
nothing can
there's
stop
a,
me
a,
now.
A possibility of an actual presidency out of this.
Oh my God.
Sure. But that petulant child,
exactly.
once they're no longer winning the game and it's no longer fun.
They're done.
I mean, I don't think he needs to be winning the game for it to no longer be fun. I think.
Oh, I do for Trump.
I think he just needs to be getting news. He's going to take his toys and go home the instant there's a news cycle that is, like, even one day where it's the news story isn't one thing where Carson overtook Trump. For him, that's still the story, at least involves Trump. If we have a one-day news cycle where Trump's not involved in it at all, that's when he's going to take his toys and go home. Because he's not getting the attention he...
Trump losing. Just
negative attention.
Trump not going to win. He's going to be like, fuck you guys. I'm not spending any more money on this. I'm going to go back to reality TV where I belong.
Well, he has to do that the instant if he's ever at the bottom of the polls. His whole thing of calling other people losers? He can't be a loser. He has to be a quitter so he can say, fuck you.
Yeah, his whole campaign is based on, look how well I'm doing in the polls. So if he no longer has that. I don't know. It's just one poll. It's just Iowa. Iowa is its own little weird place. So,
but I think right,
we shouldn't overreact. But he overreacted.
Like, he's gonna overreact. That's
yeah, and he did.
Yeah, he did.
He did. He did. And he found the bridge too far. Making fun of John McCain, no. You know, calling all the Mexicans rapists, no. Whatever other shit he said, but insulting everyone in the first primary state, yeah, that's probably not a good idea.
Yeah.
Although I do like the idea that, he does feel so untouchable by other corporations that
he can fuck with Monsanto.
I almost like want him to stick around a little bit longer and just have him start, continue to say shit about the Koch brothers and continue to say shit about Monsanto.
Yeah.
And just start calling out the people that I think are really shitty corporations and talk shit about them.
Yeah, I want to know where he was going with the Monsanto thing. Forget about insulting Iowans for a second. Like, what are you trying to say about Monsanto?
Exactly. Let's talk more about that, Don. Do that. Let's have a talk about Monsanto. Yeah. No.
Wow.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting in the coming days. And we'll do another one of these about the news cycle that's not Benghazi, for sure, because there's a lot going on with Obama vetoing the defense spending bill and a bunch of other stuff.
There's a lot.
We got a debate in 5 days.
What's that?
We got a GOP debate, what, in five days in Boulder?
I think it's...
Yes.
28.
Yes. Wednesday. Yeah, it's Wednesday. Yeah, so
that'll be good. We'll have flash reactions to that. Warning now, we will probably be very, very drunk because there's no way I'm getting through that thing sober.
Travis can't survive another GOP debate without a couple more drinks, so we may be a little toasty, but we'll try to give you our best.
Oh, we sure will. A guy can dream, right? What if Carson just overtakes Trump and he becomes the nominee?
Can we do that? I don't even care who's on our side if they're debating.
No, you just watched Hillary. I did for 10 hours today. I want to watch her eat him alive like a praying mantis. On the debate stage, it will be the greatest day of my life. Watching Hillary Clinton talk to him about, he doesn't even know what NATO is. Watching her talk about the specifics of Cairo versus, it was...
His views on Muslim Americans, his views on gay Americans, his views on immigrants. Wow, won't that be fun?
Oh, my God. I'm going to come. I swear to God. Like, I'm just going to, have debate orgasms just from how amazing it's going to be.
I mean, he knows absolutely nothing about – doesn't even know what words we're using when we're talking about foreign policy. And on domestic policy, particularly social issues, he's on the absolute wrong side of every issue.
That doesn't hurt GOP candidates anymore. That doesn't hurt GOP candidates in the primary anymore. Doesn't even matter.
We're talking about the general, though. We're talking about
We're talking about the general, but I don't know. I think we're in for quite a few more surprises.
If we could get Ben Carson to lead in the polls, I have absolutely no reason to drink myself into a stupor during the next Democratic debate thinking about how Bernie could never run in the general because Bernie would tear him up.
Everybody on the other side, I think Bernie would do just fine against. I don't quite go with the notion that Bernie couldn't win a general. I think he very much could win a general.
I just think everyone
he'd have a lot of ground to make up, but this is what happens when you nominate two people, then you see the full head-to-head matchup, and unless you duck and cover and are awful like a Kerry or a Gore, we're in good shape, and I think we're in good shape with either Hillary or Bernie at this point.
Well, I think the thing that I think would keep Bernie from being able to run in the general is that he wouldn't get the primary nomination. because there's a large faction of people who are scared that he would not be able to win in a general. But I think if you match him up against a Ben Carson, everyone forgets about that fear, because that's anyone against Ben Carson's a slam dunk.
Agreed.
Yeah, I'm hoping Ben Carson gets more airtime. It's like I'm hoping and I'm not, because I think, you know, once people do start paying attention, it's going to be a very short-lived romance, I think. I don't know.
We're talking about, you know, more extended interviews. We start talking about, you know, some of the prime times that gets pulled in. You know, a lot of the stupid stuff that Ben Carson says, he says on Meet the Press or, you know, the Today Show. The stuff that a lot of people either write off as, well, that could be full of gaffes because that's not really a very serious interview now, is it?
Or just Meet the Press, it's not a politics one.
Yeah, exactly. Or it's something that's so abstract that nobody's going to actually watch the show. Once we start talking about real primetime interviews and, you know, a lot of the stuff where Sarah Palin really started to fall down.
Katie
Couric type of interview. You get him involved in some of that gotcha question kind of stuff. And I think people are going to realize real fucking quick that he's not a viable candidate.
Yeah.
But that's on the GOP side. I've given up trying to get into those people's heads and trying to see what's going on there. So you never know. You just never
friggin'
know.
We will keep our eye on it, that's for sure.
Well, that's about going to wrap it up. It's been quite a day, a marathon session. And we're going to be back in the next couple days just to catch up on some other non-Hillary grilling stuff. And then we are definitely going to have a Flash GOP debate, drunken discussion on the 28th, so stay tuned for that. Any other closing thoughts?
No.
Co-hosts.
I don't want to talk about Benghazi for a while.
I watched 11 hours of it on TV and then talked about it for an hour and a half afterwards after talking about what we'd talk about on this for about 2 hours. So I'm a little Benghazi'd out, so let's...
I don't even want to talk about Ben Gazzara.
Yeah.
He's a good actor. Okay, so that's it for me. I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
I'm Dana.
And I'll see you guys later.